It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Renee Montaigne is away. I'm Steve Inskeep. This morning, we'll visit one of many places struggling to contain the climbing cost of health care. The town is in Tennessee. Last year, the state dropped some 200,000 people from its 10-CARE program. That's a health care plan that replaced Medicaid. Tennessee also reduced benefits for hundreds of thousands of people. NPR's Julie Robner found out what those numbers mean to the town of Newport in one of the state's poorest counties.
Hi. It's a little before 8 a.m. in the gleaming new emergency room at Baptist Hospital of Cock County.
My goodness gracious, I'm Dr. Diaz. What's going
well,
on
I
with
didn't
you?
Have the
Dr.
Money.
Constantino Diaz Miranda is seeing his first patient of the day, Ruth Evelyn Whaley.
What was the reason that you don't get your medicines, you're saying?
Huh?
Why was the reason that you do not get your medicines?
Well, because I didn't have no money to pay for it.
I see.
It's become an increasingly common storyline in this part of the state. By some accounts, as much as 40% of Cock County residents were on 10-CARE before the cuts. Patients lose their insurance, try to get by without care, until they simply can't wait any longer.
I have had patients that they were quite sick because their insurance was not in effect any longer, and they do not have the ability to buy the medicines.
Dr. Diaz, as he calls himself, moved to eastern Tennessee from Spain 2 decades ago and never left. He says when the 10-CARE cuts happened, many expected an immediate surge in uninsured patients showing up in the ER. That didn't happen. Instead, the growth has been more insidious.
It's happening slowly. We have seen the effects of it in here at Cook County. I've been here long enough that, you know, I have lots of recurring patients that they come to the emergency department, and I know that in the past they have had 10-CARE. Today they are listed at private pay, in other words, no insured. You know, little by little it's happening and it's getting worse.
He says some of the patients show up at the hospital because without insurance they can't afford to see their primary care doctors anymore.
They have to come up with $25, $50, whatever that office will charge them to be seen. We see quite a few of those.
In other cases, patients with chronic ailments simply try to do without until they actually do need emergency care. Diaz says one woman with diabetes who'd lost her insurance was a repeat visitor.
When I saw her, it was her third visit to the emergency department with blood sugars in the 600 and 700 range.
Which is dangerously high. In the end, he simply dug into his own pocket to get her what she needed.
If she went back to the house without any insulin, she will have come back, you know, the next day or whatever. So we bought the insulin and we got somebody who was going to draw the insulin from the bottle, so she would be getting the right dose.
How long can you go on like this? Is it getting to a point where the whole thing falls apart?
We are not there yet, but I believe that if this continues this way, we will get there unless the state comes up with some sort of program where they can help those patients that they don't have no insurance.
The increase in uninsured patients is a big worry for hospital administrator Jim Decker. Just 2 years ago, the hospital spent millions of dollars to expand this emergency department from 7 to 17 beds. But it's not clear how the hospital can pay its bills if its patients can't pay theirs. And he says that could cause a ripple effect of its own.
Quite often the hospital is one of the foundation institutions of any community. And that's true certainly here. We're one of the largest employers. It's an important component of this community and one in which we're striving very, very much to maintain.
Across the street from the hospital and around a winding gravel driveway is the local food pantry.
The name of this place is the Bread Basket. They give out food to the people in the community on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Linda Owens is one of many volunteers at the Bread Basket who's also been a recipient here. She says she's seen demand for not just food, but for other services pick up since last year's 10-CARE cuts.
People are having to choose between do they buy food or do they buy medicine. That, of course, affects us in many ways. It increases our theft rate because people are having to survive. If you know you don't have a drug that's going to keep you alive, then that puts your family in a position that they're having to make choices they shouldn't have to make. Some have chose to sell their food stamps, of course, which is illegal. But they've had to do it to get the medicine that's going to keep them alive.
Phil Ruck oversees operations at the breadbasket. He carries a tally book that shows how demand has spiked since last year's 10 care cuts. He says he's not at all surprised.
We have a sign that we take to fairs that describes the cycle of poverty. One of the elements of the cycle of poverty is poor health care, because folks do not have the access to the medical care that they need. Because of that, they also get sick. Because they get sick, they can't hold a job. And so all of that impacts the total picture.
And it's not just charities feeling the impact. Local businesses have been affected by the 10 care cuts as well. Down the hill from the hospital, just across from the railroad tracks, is
Wilson Save More Pharmacy.
Marty Bailey is the owner and pharmacist.
I've been at this drugstore 23 years. I know these people very well. I know nearly everybody that walks in here, which means I know most everybody in Cock County.
In fact, many of them are featured in dozens of pictures that completely cover one wall and stretch around to two others.
These are our customers, and they enjoy coming to see their pictures on the wall or their dog. We have dogs here.
But business hasn't been so good since the 10 care cuts.
We had to lose 20 to 30% of our business when 10 care changed. We had to cut down dramatically on our prescription buying. We have had to cut back on the hours of our employees because you don't know if you're going to be able to pay the bills next month.
You hear a similar story just up the street at Jabo's Pharmacy. In front is an old-fashioned soda fountain. It's crowded with workers from the ConAgra canned food factory next door, many still wearing their hairnets.
Here's another order. I have a Chuck Wagon.
But the 50s-era front of the store contrasts dramatically with the scene behind Jabo's Pharmacy counter. There, busy clerks stand in front of computer monitors while a huge counting machine sorts pills and spits them out neatly in bottles. Jeremy Sherrod is one of the pharmacists. He says the last few months have been particularly difficult, especially for the 10 care patients who've had to cut back on their prescriptions.
You know, it's hard to tell them whether to treat their diabetes or their congestive heart failure. Which one are they going to die the quickest if they don't take their medication? It's like we're making the decision of life and death in a sense, and we're not meant to do that.
Sherrod says he worries most about the people who come from some of the more remote areas in the foothills of the Great Smoky Mountains. He says when they encounter problems at the pharmacy counter, they're as likely as not just to go home.
Obviously in a rural community where there's less education, less jobs available, where the people are less aggressive to fight for their rights, it's going to make a larger impact than it would in a more suburban area. I mean, it's just the people just accept it and say, hey, can't get it, we'll go on without it. If we live, we live. If we die, we die.
Just last week, Tennessee Governor Phil Bredesen signed into law a new program that would subsidize private insurance for low-income working families. But most of those who were dropped from 10 care last year won't be eligible. And it's not yet clear how much the new program will help boost the fortunes of the people of Cock County. Julie Rovner, NPR News.
Okay, they're not ready to be filled, none of them.